This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The headline in yesterday's Charlotte Observer read, Charlotte immigrants' stories have one thing in common these days, fear. And that's the story across the country during these dawning days of the Trump administration. It started with the president's executive order restricting immigration and banning the arrival of refugees for 120 days. That order was quickly stayed by the courts, but shortly thereafter, ICE, the Federal Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, began a series of arrests. This past Monday, federal officials announced the arrest of more than 100 undocumented immigrants in the Carolinas, with a similar number occurring in other areas of the nation. Those specific charges were not detailed for the 84 immigrants arrested in this state and the 19 in South Carolina. ICE says it is targeting criminals. Still, that has raised the level of fear in the immigrant community, even among those who are documented. Though Charlotte is not a sanctuary city, we haven't been aggressive in finding and rounding up undocumented immigrants, and CMPD has had a longstanding policy not to ask about a person's status in the course of normal interactions. We wanted to know more about that policy, and so we've invited Chief Kerr Putney to rejoin us on the program to talk about that and about some other issues as well. And later in the program, we will further explore the impact on Charlotte's immigrant community due to policies enacted by the Trump administration. Chief Putney, welcome back. Good to see you again.
Thank you for the invitation.
Let me hear from you, in your words, what CMPD's policy is on interactions with anybody that you come in contact with.
Yes, sir. Well, 2015, the end of 2015, the legislation in the state came out saying that we could not prohibit our officers from asking immigration status or from sharing that information with federal authorities. So up until that point, we prohibited it. So we pulled that out of our policy, and now we're in line with the state law, which is in line with federal law. So we can't prohibit our officers from asking for the immigration status. However, our practice and our philosophy is we're trying to connect with all communities. Therefore, the request, the inquiry, isn't really relevant to us because it is the federal government's job. It's ICE's job to do that work. We do partner with our federal government when we make cases on violent criminals, and some of which, after conviction and they go to jail, they are deported. That is about the extent of it. So I tell everybody, if you're not committing crimes in our jurisdiction, you're not going to have an issue with us around your immigration status.
And the mayor has said we're not a sanctuary city. You have just said that you're in line with federal and state law on this topic, and yet in the paper this morning, and I think we've been reporting it as well, the big headline today in the paper was that Charlotte Mayor Roberts may have put our city in jeopardy of losing $20 million in funding because of comments that she made that give the illusion that we are not in compliance with at least state law, and there's no love lost between Raleigh and Charlotte. They're looking for reasons to cut us, it seems to me. So you're saying that we are right to the letter following the state law?
Yes, we are. The legislation on the state or federal level does not compel us to inquire about immigration status. Therefore, we do not. If we were compelled, it'd be a different story. And the other thing, Mike, is I'm not here to thumb my nose at the federal government. Many of the federal agencies are very good partners of ours, which help us improve the safety and maintain safety in our city. However, the confusion is around what our role is in enforcing those immigration laws, and we don't have one.
Well, when it comes to other federal laws that you may or may not get involved with at the local level, what are they? I mean, is this an exception?
We don't enforce internal revenue laws. We don't enforce most of the federal laws because that is outside of our purview. We do partner with the federal agencies because they can indeed take those to the federal level for prosecution. And we do that quite often with violent crimes of gang violence and terrorism, to be quite frank with you. We don't have those authorities, so we partner with them to do that work.
So let's break it down to a very low level here. So there's no lack of understanding, because there is this fear running
in the
immigrant community. When you stop somebody for a traffic violation or a broken taillight or something, and you're just pulling the person over to say, hey, you got a broken taillight, you need to get that fixed, you don't ask them what their immigration status is. Is that correct?
That's correct. It's irrelevant.
But an officer can, if they want to, ask them.
Per state law, yes.
Okay. If you break a bar fight or intervene in a domestic dispute, you don't ask them about their immigration status, but an officer could if they wanted to. If they do you have to answer truthfully?
That is going to be up to that individual. And I always encourage people to be truthful.
Okay.
Because lying to an officer is indeed a crime.
So if you are asked and you answer truthfully and you are undocumented, what then?
That's the big question. What then? Our role, again, is to fight crime. So if you're not involved in a crime.
But isn't that a crime?
Is what a crime?
Being here undocumented.
It is against federal law, yes. So what would happen if we're let's just use another example. We're indiscriminately stopping people, and I stop you and ask you for your immigration status. It's a voluntary contact. You don't have to say anything to me, but if you do tell me your immigration status, then as an officer I determine the next steps. What we tell our people is it's not relevant to us unless you're committing a crime. And if you're a victim of crime, we don't care about your immigration status then. What we care about is solving that crime and bringing the people who've committed that crime to justice. So it is therein lies our issue, Mike. It is very confusing because people believe that we're here to enforce immigration laws.
Well, it's not policy because it can't be policy. Therefore, every person walking the street is political. They have politics.
Yes, they do.
At their root, how confident are you that police officers are really not asking the question?
Because I don't see a lot of evidence that they're locking people up indiscriminately who are, the example was a tail light and, that is not what we're locking people up for. We're locking people up for crimes. If you're breaking into other people's houses, that's a criminal act.
Okay, and when you apprehend somebody who's breaking into a house or somebody who's shot somebody else, whether the person is injured or dies,
absolutely.
Do you then ask what their immigration status is?
As a practice, no. We take you you to the Mecklenburg County Jail, and 287G attaches at that point, and then ICE gets involved to determine whether or not you'll be deported.
287G is something that the Sheriff's Department takes a role in. This is a government program to detain undocumented immigrants, and the Sheriff's Department enforces that. Why do they enforce cooperating with the federal government, and yet CMPD does not?
It's a voluntary program, and our sheriff has determined that and the sheriff before him determined that that was a program they wanted to be a part of. Therefore, they opted in.
Okay. The president has said that Mexico is sending us their worst. He said he calls them bad hombres, and he's called them rapists, and he's called them murderers. From your experience in Charlotte, is that statement true?
Well, Mike, that's a broad statement. And again, I'm not here thumbing my nose at the president or the federal government, but my experience, I told you I did an immersion in Mexico. I am struggling to try to learn the language and have been for quite some time. But I have an appreciation for the culture. I'm not going to make a broad statement on anybody, regardless of where you're from. And I see that as being the same when you talk about Mexico or any other country.
But statistically, in Charlotte, among the people who have come into contact with police officers, either because they've been caught in the commission of a crime or apprehended because of a previous crime, are these people bad hombres, or are they just people?
I don't have any data that shows me Mexicans are arrested at a higher rate than any other immigrants that we might have in this jurisdiction. So I'm not arguing the point. All I'm saying is I don't see evidence that would back that up here.
What is the percentage of people who are arrested for committing crimes who are either immigrants or undocumented immigrants?
I don't have that data. You'd have to request that through ICE. We don't track data in that manner.
Okay. You said that your primary goal is to prevent and solve crimes, so it is critical to maintain trust between your department and all communities in Charlotte. And even the federal government has this effort to fight terrorism called If You See Something, Say Something.
Yes.
I take it that your argument is that if people cannot trust the law enforcement people that they will be reporting something that they see to, they won't.
We see that all the time, Mike. If there is no trust, and in some of our communities, Latino communities and some of our black communities, if they don't have a high level of trust of us, they're not going to report things to us that they see, criminal or otherwise.
So, sure. So because you don't go out of your way to ask people their status when you have encounters with them, have you been able to build that trust? What's the result of your approach, I guess, is the question.
We have built quite a bit of trust. I was just a couple months ago at an event that is hosted by Our Lady of Guadalupe, mm-hmm. attended by about 300 Latinos, and we had a great conversation. We continue to do a lot of outreach there. So, yes, we struggle because anytime you feel somebody is intent on randomly taking your freedom, they're going to be suspicious of you. So we struggle. But, yes, we're making some headway.
So in the last couple of weeks, we've heard news reports of a rise in fear in the immigrant community because of the ban, the immigrant and refugee ban, which is currently on a temporary hold at the court level, and also the rise in ICE activity and arrests. How does that affect you when ICE is out there arresting people at the federal level? Because you're all wearing badges.
Sure.
How does that affect you? Well, and your ability to communicate with these folks?
Again, people who are reasonable are having a conversation and they understand the difference. Again, if you're committing crimes, you're putting yourself at peril, you're putting your ability to live here in peril. And we tell people, if you're a victim of crime, our job is to solve that crime. If you're committing a crime, our job is to bring you to justice. And by bringing you to justice, if 287G attaches, that is where the immigration piece of the puzzle is affected.
We'll talk a lot more about this later in the program, but I guess I would imagine that some officers in your force have relationships with people in the immigrant community because of your approach to this thus far. So are you hearing stories of people telling officers of their fear and what they're afraid of and how
Absolutely.
It's impacted the community?
Absolutely. Hearing? We're hearing a lot of fear. We're also hearing, though, that there have been some false stories created by people who want to, you know, continue to stir up that fear. But we're hearing legitimate fear from people who are worried about the status of their parents. And they're thinking that the application of the immigration, the enforcement of the immigration laws will, tear their family apart.
Yeah.
So what we're trying to do is just what I'm telling you. We're trying to make sure they understand that is not our role. Our job is to continue to make sure the city's safe and all community members are safe as well.
There isn't just fear. There is anger in this community, and several groups got together last Friday and called on police and other city officials to protect them from what they view as a war on immigrant families. Can you do that? Will you do that?
Protect against the law? I'm sorry, that's not quite what we're here for. I'm not here to help anybody violate the law. What I'm telling you is the way the law works. If you're not committing crimes, 287G doesn't attach, and you have a lot less to fear. If you are committing crimes, then it very well could.
Mecklenburg County Commissioner Bill James wants Charlotte to ask the Justice Department if the city is complying with the president's executive order, and he worries that CMPD's – and he's not alone. Other people have come out about this. He worries that CMPD's policy of not asking people about their immigration status could jeopardize federal funds for the city. You're confident? You've talked to the city attorney, the county attorney about this?
I have no worries along those lines. We're doing our job within the boundaries of law. I stand behind them. I believe in them, and we're going to conduct business as we have been.
Okay. We have to take a break. We'll come back with more with Chief Kerr Putney from Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department in a moment. We'll talk about a little bit more about immigration and some other issues as well. Stay with us. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Sanger Heart and Vascular Institute, part of the Carolinas healthcare system, offering comprehensive heart care, including the region's only minimally invasive heart bypass option and heart transplant center. And Atrium Animal Hospital and Wellness Center, providing holistic animal health care for 20 years, offering pet parents a strategy to achieve and maintain furry family vitality. AtriumAnimalHospital.com. Former Mecklenburg County Manager Harry Jones loses his battle with cancer. Charlotte immigrants are nervous in the face of ICE arrests. Governor Cooper strikes out with his HB2 compromise. Those stories and more on the local news roundup on this program tomorrow at 9. And I want to remind you to save the date. WFAE is planning a public conversation to talk about immigration policy enforcement and its impact on the immigrant community in Charlotte. It will be Tuesday night, February 28th. We'll have details about where and what time later on.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, tax reform and your shopping cart. American retailers, importers are warning of big price hikes. American exporters are ready to celebrate. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
That's coming up next from 10 to noon, right after Charlotte talks with Mike Collins on listener-funded public radio, 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Chief Kerr Putney from CNPD is with us. We've just talked a lot about immigrants. We'll talk some more about immigrants and the anger and frustration and fear in that community with some other folks a little bit later on in the program. But I only have you to 9:30, and I want to cover some more territory here.
Yes,
after years of a nationwide decline in the crime rate, there has been a slight uptick, and the same is true here in Charlotte. Homicides, I think we're up 16.7%. Last year, assaults up 11.4%. Robberies saw an 8.9% increase. Vehicle thefts, my gosh, rose 24.4%. Do you understand what's going on?
Well, it's a complex issue, but what I can tell you from my perspective is after 10 to 15 years of decline, we're seeing that trend kind of take the opposite turn on us. What we've done is ask for more officers, but what we're also looking at, though, is specific ways we can prevent some of these crimes from occurring. As far as our car thefts and larcenies from auto, what we're telling people is if someone comes by your car and can see valuables in it, there's a high likelihood they're going to steal them. Mm-hmm. We want you to lock your doors, but we also want you to take your valuables out. The violent crime is what's really bothering us, though. Issue with gun violence is a serious issue across the country and here locally. We have too many people that want to settle minor disputes with a firearm. So we're focused on our priority offenders that we see who continue to engage in gun violence. If I'm willing to point a gun at you or shoot into a house that's occupied,
right,
I'm much more likely to commit a homicide. So those are the kinds of people we're really focusing on as we see those kinds of crimes occur around the jurisdiction.
There was a newspaper carrier shot and killed, I think it was the night before last.
Yes, sir.
It seemed to be random. What do you know about that?
Yes, right now what we know is intent appears to be robbery. What we also know is the issue we were struggling with, and Wes is well known to many of us who've worked uptown, is it touches people who we think are going about their business in a everyday way, not really engaging in risky behavior. Those are the kinds that really strike you, and it's like a punch to the gut. So we doubled down, really trying to find out exactly what's going on. We're looking to make additional cases that are in that area. But right now, I'm just happy that we were able to find out exactly what occurred in that particular case.
You've asked in the past for more police officers, and I think you got half of what you asked for. And I would think that you're probably going to be asking again in the future. Because
yes, sir. You know the math. Yes, sir.
Because we're under-policed for the size of the city that we are, and
yes,
we're growing quickly. And
we are.
But I guess my question is, you could not have – more police would not have prevented that shooting.
Unfortunately, no. But what I see is – if we're more proactive, if we're more visible, we can deter. What we can't measure, Mike, is what we prevent. But I know, because I've seen over the last 8 years even, the more we have at our disposal working the way we do, we can avoid some of those consequences. Not all, but a lot more, hopefully.
You've identified four areas that have been experiencing higher than normal rates of violent crime, and they are Central Avenue, East and Eastway Drive, the Plaza and Eastway, Milton Road and Sharon Amity, and Sugar Creek I-85 Corridor.
Yes, sir.
Why tell people where you're going to put more officers to fight crime? Why tell them that?
I don't want there to be any misunderstanding. If you're there to commit crimes, you might want to choose a different city, hopefully.
But doesn't that run the risk of them saying, well, we can't go there, so we'll go over here?
Displacement is effective. Right now what we see is if they generally aggregate in a certain area, we're going to disrupt that practice, that behavior. And what I'll also let you know is the more we can keep people off their routine, mm-hmm. the less likely they will commit crimes.
Last year's riots following Keith Lamont Scott's shooting by police resulted in calls for more transparency. At the same time, the state law changed with regard to how you can get access to body and dash cam footage, which kind of ties your hands in many cases. But put a video aside, nearly 3 weeks after, is it Jesu Javier Diaz?
Yes.
Mr. Diaz was fatally shot by police. CMPD has refused to identify the officer, even to the family. Is that because he was working undercover?
That's precisely why.
Okay.
We do not release the name of an officer who's working undercover because it could jeopardize not only the safety of the officer, which is paramount, but also the many cases that have yet to be prosecuted.
But then how do people working on behalf of the victim find out whether this was a random act or whether this is part of a pattern of behavior on the part of that officer?
Well, that's the whole point of on the behalf of the officer.
Yes.
Well,
there's a big lack of trust about how police interact with people.
Here's what I can tell you, Mike. What's interesting is a lot of people say that, but I think the majority of the citizens of this city do have quite a bit of trust for us as an organization, and it's proven in every study that we do annually. Do we see a decrease in certain segments? Sure. But what we're trying to do is more outreach. But I'll tell you, we have to allow the process to work, the fact-finding to continue, and then the district attorney will present all of the facts so that everybody can see exactly what we know, when we knew it, and make their own determination after he's made his adjudication.
Because there is some conflicting information here with regard to the police say one thing and an eyewitness says another.
Sure.
That will eventually come out in the wash?
Absolutely. Any inconsistencies in statements will be readily apparent when the district attorney reviews and covers all that information.
Was this captured in any way by police dash or body cams?
No. Undercover officers do not have body-worn cameras. That would, again, jeopardize
that would
their
off. Well,
yeah,
what
their safety.
What about the cars? Because cameras are tiny now.
Yeah, dash cams. That was another issue for us. Dash cams, the technology is obsolete, so we're looking at new versions of it. We have yet to find one that is actually going to give us what we need, so that is a part of it. But we generally don't have dash cams in our undercover vehicles either.
But police-wide, department-wide, you are pushing for more dash cams. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. Once we can determine what that technology needs to be, because technology changes so fast. And I'll also say this, Mike: we can put cameras all over the city if we want to, and we act as though that's going to capture everything and increase trust. I can tell you, from having done this job when cameras did not exist, ultimately the justice system is set up to be based on the facts. And a camera can't always give you all angles to definitively show everybody who sees that footage the true facts.
It's not a multiple camera shoot TV show.
Nothing is perfect.
Yeah.
Yes, nothing is perfect.
How much would it take? How much money would it take to outfit all of the patrol cars with dash cams?
That's yet to be determined. I'm sure it's going to be sticker shock because the technology is emerging, but don't really know exactly what that's going to look like right now.
And body cams, because they're not broadcast television steady cams.
Right.
Don't always show you what the officers see because they're jiggling around. They're not necessarily placed exactly where they need to be for that particular shot that you're trying to see. So are you looking for ways to anchor body cams in a better way so that we see a better field of view?
We absolutely are. We have them on the shoulder or the head, but again, it depends on what you're looking at and where you're pointed at the time. So we're looking at center mass on the officers as well. We're testing some of those. We believe it is a steadier version. But again, no camera angle that we can create is going to be perfect.
Do you think you're making headway in building trust, particularly within the African-American community, not just because of acts that have taken place between the police department here and the African-American, but all over the country this is a problem? Are you making headway, do you think?
Well, I do believe so, yes. Some of the very people who are protesting are now doing great work, collaborating with us.
Okay.
They're showing us some blind spots that we didn't even realize we had. They're stepping out and, sometimes even fighting a false narrative. But they're also seeing on a deeper level that we are just like the community that we police. We're human. We're imperfect. But for the most part, we have our hearts in the right place. We're not intentionally trying to do anybody harm. Nobody likes to hear it, but I'm going to continue to say it. If you cooperate and communicate, you'll allow us to de-escalate a lot of these volatile situations. Out of 71 SWAT deployments, only 69 of them were resolved without us firing around. So, yes, I think we are getting better. We got a lot more work to do, Mike.
Do you think you're more transparent?
Yes, I do. Transparency workshops are going on all the time. And here's the thing. If you want me to be irresponsibly transparent, meaning give you everything when you want it, how you want it, just because you want it, because you think that's going to change most hearts and minds, most of the people right now believe in what we're trying to do and believe in the way we're trying to do it. So, yes, I think we're a transparent organization. I think anyone can compare us to any other organization across the country, and you'd see we fare fairly well.
Chief Kirk Putney, the Chief of Police here in Charlotte-Mecklenburg, thank you very much for the time. I appreciate
it. Always. Thank you, sir.